Yeah, so thanks, Tom. As everyone knows, I'm in the moment in Italy in vacation. So if I'm going out, Chris is going to take over. You never know. So at the APCC, the biochemical relapse chapter was a very complicated one. So there was a lot of non-consensus in that chapter, and we're very happy now to hopefully get some clarity about that. So the first question is really like, so at what PSA level do you think, Neha, that we should do an imaging, and what kind of imaging, obviously?
Sure,
Neha,
absolutely.
before you
Yeah.
start, I've already messed this up. I'm really sorry. But if you'd like to introduce yourself before you answer the question, that'd be great. I'm terribly sorry. Brian normally
No,
does that bit, which is
no
we
problem.
need him back. We need him back.
Well, for starters, I wish I was traveling with you, Silky, through the mountains and the tunnels. That would be much more fun.
Next time.
But yes, well, thank you for having me. So I'm Neha Vapiwala. I'm a professor of radiation oncology at the University of Pennsylvania, specializing in prostate cancer treatment, and very happy and honored to be with all of you today. And some of, I think, my role in this stems from the ECOG-ACRIN 8191 INDICATE trial that just recently opened, that's going to try and shed some light on these issues. But getting back to your question, Silky, I think just to take a step back, part of the, I think, growing need, and I think the call for some clarity in this space comes from, at least in the US, an increasing number of our prostate cancer patients being diagnosed with higher risk disease due to changes and delays in PSA screening. And then in turn, an increasing use of radical prostatectomy to treat some of these high risk and potentially locally advanced non-metastatic patients. And so we're seeing a population that presents with biochemical recurrence, and that means we got to figure out what to do. And they tend to be very, as you can imagine, varied in their presentations. You have folks who had pathological findings that you could have predicted that they would need additional treatment. You have others where they're really low risk and suddenly they're presenting with biochemical recurrence. And so, how to manage them, how to even work them up to get to your question, and at what PSA level to even start thinking about restaging is really all over the map. I've often said it's depending on who you ask, when you ask them, and who's in the room at the time, you can get different answers. And so, if you're talking about PET scans, and at least in the US right now, fluciclovine PET is really the only commercially available, widely available option that we have among the modern agents. All of the data really tell us, including from the LOCATE trial, which was the main trial that provided us the FDA approval, that if your PSA is under 0.5, you're really not going to see much with this scan. And once you start getting into the range of PSAs above one or above two, that's when you actually have the chances of actual disease seen on PET of 65 to 75%. So when you think about the population we're often managing in clinic, they come in with these ultrasensitive PSA levels, PSAs below 0.2. They want to know what's going on. And the truth is, our current widely available PET imaging is really subpar for our needs.
Pick up on that. So there's all this new data about PSMA PET being better than actinium PET. Can we just set the stage now and address the question, how much better is PSMA PET than actinium PET? And what is its low limit of detection? Just really not chance of seeing something below that. But what if the does PSMA PET improve upon that?
Yeah, and I think that that's exactly right, Chris. There's a lot of excitement, obviously, just for gallium PSMA PET, and now most recently the PyL compound, which literally just very recently received FDA approval in the US. But when you look at some of the early data from UCSF, UCLA on gallium, the specificity for nodal detection, for example, which really is one of the most important things we're using the PET for, is intra and extra pelvic metastases. Are they there or not? And the specificity is excellent, 95%, but sensitivity with gallium PSMA was still only around 40%. And if you're talking about, that's in the intact setting, I should clarify that these patients were evaluated. But again, it was clearly correlated with the PSA levels. So even though, yes, it is arguably more sensitive, in some of the direct comparisons that have been done, it's not a home run. It's not like we're suddenly able to catch patients at extremely low PSAs the way we often see them in clinic. So I still think there's, room for improvement, let's say, but certainly progress with PSMA agents over flucyclovine as far as the minimum PSA threshold.
But Neha, really, concretely, what are you doing? So let's say you would have mm-hmm. gallium PSMA available in the States or something that is very similar. How long would you wait? At what level, let's say after radical prostatectomy to start with, because it's obviously different if you do it after radical mm-hmm. radiotherapy. So what level would you choose to say this patient needs now an imaging with PET?
We usually have been waiting till 0.2 as a minimum. There will be patients where, let's say the velocity of the PSA rise, the rapidity with which, the recurrence occurred, let's say it's within a year of surgery, in together with horrible pathology findings, we might do the imaging sooner because we're more concerned. But for your typical patient where it's been more than 2 years since surgery, it's a somewhat indolent rise, I wait till at least 0.2 before I think about imaging.
Okay, so, interesting. So, and then I think now comes the real big question, right? So let's say we don't see anything in the PSMA PET-CT. As you have explained very nicely, doesn't mean that there isn't anything.
Right.
So what are you doing? Are you now saying you're doing like we did like long time before, salvage radiotherapy? Or are you saying, no, I'm like some really very prominent radiotherapists do, just wait and do other imaging and then treat when you see something on the PSMA PET-CT? So what would be your approach outside of clinical studies?
Yeah, no, excellent question. And we do face this quite a bit.
Yeah.
So part of it is going to depend on the man in front of you and potentially loved ones that are in the room and sort of what the goals of care are. So that's always number one. What are the expectations in terms of outcome? What's age and general health status of the patient? And what is the actual clinical risk that you think this patient has of having undetected micromets? Because we, as you just said, Silky, the absence of PET-defined local involvement is not proof of absence of disease. We'd like to think it is, but the negative predictive value has its limits. And so even the Empire One study did show that. And so I think, if you have everything lining up in a way where the pathology findings from prostatectomy, the pace of the PSA rise, the absolute value of the PSA, and a negative PET, if all of those are concordant for the most part, or most of those are concordant, that there is not metastatic disease, I think it makes perfect sense to proceed with standard of care, prostate bed and pelvic radiation mm-hmm. therapy with 6 months of androgen deprivation. And the RTOG-0534 SPORT trial is going to be published imminently, and presuming that shows the continued failure-free survival benefit to treating lymph nodes in all of these patients, we will, I think, adopt that practice widely among radiation oncologists. But then, and conversely, if you have a negative PET, but everything else tells you, including your gut, tells you that this patient is likely to explode with metastatic disease, I don't believe that you should put aside your knowledge and your thoughts on the matter just because there's a negative PET. I think it's reasonable in those patients to, still start with the same approach I just outlined, but perhaps prepare the patient for the possibility that systemic therapy may change, may be longer, and may be enhanced. If that makes sense.
Can I dissect mm-hmm. a couple of those points? And I just want to underscore, we are 100% focusing on trying to cure patients in this setting. And when you use the word metastatic disease, Neha. I think you're meaning disease that's outside of where the prostate bed was, and but that doesn't mean the patient is not curable with our therapy. That's my impression. Do you and Silke agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I think absolutely there is the spectrum that we see. I think all of us have seen the difference in the natural history and, of course, oligometastatic, but even some patients who don't quite fit the oligo title. And, you know, that, of course, is all conventional imaging defined historically, right? This idea that five is the upper limit, but who's to say it's not six or seven or eight in the molecular imaging era? So I agree with you. It's not about curative versus non-curative so much as, you know, are we going to let the crux of the therapy be systemic versus local? And that's where I think I'm trying to make that distinction, you know, on behalf of the patient to help them understand what it is that we're going after and why.
And one very interesting thing you said, Neha, because I talk a lot about that because we see these patients a lot, and I think you get like five different answers from five different radiotherapists, right? What kind? So yes, so you said pretty clearly you are using, if you do salvage, you use ADT. So there's also people who say no, right? And then you would use, because there is this data with 150 milligrams of picolutamide. Are you from the French study? Are you using that one? Are you using LHRH? How long? I think also there, I guess there is a lot of uncertainty. What is the best approach really for adding this ADT, if you want to add it at all?
That's right. Yeah. No, and I think part of that came from, if you look at RTOG 9601, which did use 2 years of bicalutamide, 150 milligrams, even some of the study authors have said that in practice, they actually use 6 years of LHRH analog. So, you know, and
six
I think,
months,
I'm so sorry. I meant, sorry, 6 months of 6 months of LHRH, you know, rather than the 2 years of bicalutamide. Yeah. And I think we all know why, you know, some of the extra side effects of the bicalutamide, as well as the reality that 2 years of an oral drug for patients isn't always as easy as it sounds. And also, if you look at that study, and I think part of the hesitation, Silke, and why not everyone agrees about giving ADT, and I do think in some lower PSA value patients, it is reasonable to omit it, is because in their subset and in their retrospective sort of, you know, subset analysis, placebo was favored for patients with PSAs below 0.7, which seems pretty dramatic that you have to wait till a PSA of 0.7 to benefit from six, you know, from 2 years of bicalutamide. But I think because of that portion, people were feeling justified in omitting any ADT unless the PSA was above a certain value, based on that, based on the 9601. But I think the wisdom is moving towards using it even in lower post-op PSA settings. And I think between the SPORT trial and the French trial, I think we have enough data that I think will support that. Maybe you don't use it at 0.2, but certainly, you know, I think taking all the factors into account, I think it's going to be used more, not less, with post-op RT.
So let me see if I can double down on a couple of these statements that you've made with a couple of case examples for the audience. A patient presents with a PSA of 0.18 post-prostatectomy, and they had margin positive and extracalc extension 18 months prior. Would you get a PSMA PET, yes or no?
What did you say the PSA was?
0.18.
I knew very unfair. Very unfair.
I know. It's what I thought I heard.
Make it 0.2.
Okay, yeah. No, these are the questions that are coming up. Some people have moved to treating with a PSA of 0.1, radiating with. And the reason why I say that is it's a question we're having in our clinics at Dana-Farber right now, actually.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I don't mind that you, I know you threw the curveball, the 0.18, because the positive margin makes it a little bit easier for me to say in a healthy patient who's, you know, continent, potent, motivated, I think it is absolutely reasonable to treat based on the positive margin. And while I may consider, you know, a short order repeat PSA, let's say in 4 weeks, if the patient's not particularly ready to start treatment, I might say, let's get one in 48 weeks. And if it nudges closer to 0.2, kind of go ahead and get that PET, but always with the caveat, and I tell every patient, you know, it is likely I'm going to get the scan and it's not going to change a bit of our conversation today, that it won't change what we're saying today because it's not necessarily going to show anything. It doesn't mean that this PSA is not real. And that's where, you know, I try to sort of prep them before we even get the scan. So the short answer to your question is I would likely consider offering treatment based on the positive margin, but not necessarily get a PET at such a low PSA.
So you did get
a PSA. Or if I did get it, at least prep them for the likelihood that it will be negative.
It does come back negative, and the PSA is now 0.19. How would you treat them? The rates and the hormone treatment.
So as of right now, and did you say they had nodes, sufficient node samples at the time of prostatectomy?
Yep.
I know you said ECE.
I didn't. Mm-hmm. He had zero nodes sampled and they were all negative.
Okay. And so I would say, you said zero nodes sampled? Sorry.
So is it three nodes sampled, zero involved?
Involved. So right, so minimal. I think generally in patients who have Gleason score 7, six or seven on final path, who didn't have SVI, who you think at least had some good pre-op staging that suggested, you know, absence of nodal involvement. The three nodes doesn't impress me much, but, you know, at least you have some other things to go on. I would generally, for a positive margin at a low PSA, consider bed only. And at this point, until the SPORT trial and others sort of establish it, I would absolutely talk about ADT, but not be dogmatic about it. That this is a patient in whom it is very reasonable that this is coming entirely locally and we might be able to spare him. So I generally offer it, but if they wince at it or are not motivated for the ADT, I have a very low threshold for letting them get out of it. But if you said to me he's Gleason 9, this happened within 6 months of surgery. I think you said 18 months here, so he's kind of on the border.
Yeah.
But let's say it was sooner than that, or persistent PSA, or sort of rapidly rising to 0.18/0.19, then I feel more strongly about the ADT and I don't let them off the hook as easily.
And they could possibly go on the DASL study, but that's another story too.
That's
right. For those very, very high risk patients. The next question then, just to follow through on that, what radiation fields would you give for the patient who's Gleason 7, 4 plus 3 with the PSA for 0.19, PSMA PET net?
Right. So how far out from surgery?
18 months.
Same 18 months. Again, I think for that patient, assuming positive margin, I think bed only at this time is still justifiable. I think once the SPORT trial, as I say, is out, I think there will be increasing use of pelvic nodal radiation together with the bed as a standard, but it's not going to be 100%. I don't see a day where we 100% treat the pelvic nodes in every single patient, regardless of PSA. I think there will be those where we just feel confident enough that it's likely to be bed only, even without PET.
So now I'm going to give you the scenario where this same patient, PSA 0.19, PSMA, Gleason 7, extra capture extension, margin positive, 0.3 nodes sampled, 0.3 of the nodes sampled had cancer. And he now has an internal ileal lymph node that's mildly positive SUV, let's say 6 PSMA PET.
Any CT correlate?
Of course not. It's 0.5 centimeters.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear that.
No, I didn't. I'm just saying the scenario that we all face. Yeah.
I know exactly. We always, don't be silly. Right. So that's a patient where, and this is sort of where I wholly admit I'm conveniently fitting the data that I want to fit the clinical scenario that I think I see, right? Mm-hmm. So I, with that complete disclaimer of what I'm doing, being convenient, I think this is a patient where I would say, you know what? There are data to support treating the nodes. You're somebody, if you don't have major abdominal surgery, don't have major risks, where I'd be concerned about the additional volume of treatment. Even though we don't know that this is absolutely for real, it's too small to biopsy. We should go ahead and treat the nodes anyway. And if I did have any sort of CT correlate or anything that I thought I could see more grossly, I would even consider what's called an infield boost, where we actually deposit some extra dose within the microscopic nodal volume. We give extra dose to the parts that are radiographically concerning or biopsy proven. So in this particular case, you could argue, well, you don't even have to boost anything. Just go ahead and include the nodes, be safe. And I would just add, if there was a patient who said absolutely no to the radiation piece, for some reason was adamant that they only wanted the bed radiated, on occasion I would, you know, convince them then to do the ADT and perhaps reimage and see if that lesion's gone away, you know, and delay the RT piece. Sometimes we've used that as a surrogate to see if there's ADT response. Not necessarily in this case, I don't think, but, you know, in other cases where it's really indeterminate and would be helpful to establish.
And now, would you give the radiotherapy only to postpone ADT if someone would like to have that?
They'd have to make a compelling case, not in this guy with the concern of the node and the higher Gleason. Or actually, I forget if Chris gave him a higher Gleason, but in my mind, I did. but yeah, you know, if he's presenting within 2 years of surgery and then there's any suspicion on the PET, I would try to first understand why they're trying to avoid the ADT. A lot of times they are reasons that aren't really rational, and you can make a compelling reason why they need it. But yeah, there will be those handful that no matter what, they're not getting it. And then you at least can make the argument to try to maximize the RT as much as possible.
And the reason why, but one of the arguments I think we should have, one of the conversations we should have, saying, if we double down on our therapies now and maximize the chance your PSA goes down and never comes back, you'll never need the hormones again. So a 6 month investment of hormones now may save you a lifelong later.
I always do say that. And you know, it's interesting, Chris, I'm sure you get the question all the time. Well, why can't I just do the RT now and I'll just save the ADT for if I need it? And I always make that distinction that it's, while it's the same therapy, it would be with different intent and different duration and purpose. And that's, you know, how I often am able to help them understand.
So can we go back to the Empire One study and the conversation we've just had and how that study informs what we've just talked about?
Yeah, so the Empire One study, you know, was recently published by our colleagues, Dr. Johnny and others at Emory, and it actually stands for the Emory Molecular Prostate Imaging for Radiotherapy Enhancement Trial, and specifically used fluciclovine in patients who were presenting with biochemical recurrence in the post-prostatectomy setting. And they essentially were looking at whether the failure rate at 3 years after salvage radiotherapy was better in patients who had PET versus not. So it's a relatively small study. There were about 81 patients without PET, 76 with PET. And, you know, they essentially were able to show with the primary endpoint of 3 year failure-free survival, statistically significant difference using the Z-test, where they basically showed that the patients who were treated with the use of PET guiding their therapy did better. And so, you know, you always wonder, well, what was the actual decision that was made as a result of the PET, right? So if you look at how many of the patients had a change in management as a result of the PET within that arm, there were some that essentially had pelvic nodes treated in addition to the bed, whereas previously they would have only had the bed. There were actually 10 patients for whom the volume of radiation was increased as a result of the PET. And then there were 14 patients for whom the initially the intention was to do bed only, and then they moved to doing both that and the nodes. I'm sorry, it's confusing to say without a visual.
I think, Chris, I mean, we could probably talk for another 30 minutes, but we are already overrunning, I feel, at least, because I don't have my watch in my vacation. So I guess if you don't have a burning question, do you have a last burning question?
I do one question. What I would just say is, how are we going to address this at the APCC meeting, Dr. Gillison?
So in October, we don't have that topic because we had to do it virtually and very small. But we will have a lot of these questions for 2022 for April, when we hopefully can meet again in Lugano, really face to face. But would be really nice, and we will hopefully get some consensus after we have new data. So thank you very much, Neil.
Absolutely, thank you, Neha, for having.
Thank you very much, and Silky, I'm very impressed. It sounds like you're in a major incident with those police cars going by. I'm very impressed. I hope Rudy's not been arrested. Or
I hope my husband is not arrested.
Right, I hope now. So. Neha, listen, thanks so much. It was really interesting. Absolutely. and I hope we can see each other soon.
Same bye here. Bye. Thank you so much, everyone.
Cheers, everybody.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. 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 Thanks, Tom Fogg.
Ciao.